my friends. You are listening to Radio Chaos 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas, and or you may be listening to KAOS959.com, streaming live on the internet. So if you're driving your car and you're heading out of radio range, then you can just go to KAOS959.com as soon as you get home, and you can listen live on the internet worldwide. So I'm Phil Drew, and coming up next is the Weekend Interview Show. We're going to interview Bridget O'Neill from the Independent Institute in Oakland about the enemy combatants and the Guantanamo and Padilla decisions that came down last week. And so stay tuned. We'll be back right after this short message.
In a world plagued by greed, Limp Bizkit and Barry Manilow one station stands alone, ejaculating a contemptuous load into the face of mainstream mediocrity. The system told them what was good. Chaos played them what they wanted to hear. This summer, if you only see one movie, we don't care, because we're a radio station. Chaos. It doesn't have to make sense.
All right, everybody, you're listening to 95.9 FM, Radio Chaos in Austin, Texas, also streaming live at KAOS959.com. And this is an abridged edition of the Weekend Interview Show today. Our guest is Bridget O'Neill. She's a researcher from the Independent Institute in Oakland, and I brought her on to talk about the appeals court decisions from the Second and Ninth Circuit last week regarding Jose Padilla and the Guantanamo detainees. So welcome to the show, Ms. O'Neill.
Thank you.
Let's see, we got two different decisions here, and I think probably the Second Circuit Court decision regarding Jose Padilla is probably the easy one. So maybe if we can start there, because I'm going to have some more questions for you about the other one.
Sure. Well, the second one is the one I'm the most fluent on, so.
Okay, well, that's good. So what happened in the Second Circuit Court case regarding Jose Padilla?
Right, abridged version. Well, essentially, Padilla's case boiled down that he was an American citizen, and in fact, it differed quite a bit from the Yasser Hamdi decision, which was, I think, about by the Fourth Circuit Court, which is known as one of the most conservative circuit courts that we have in the nation, because he was captured on domestic American grounds, opposed to Yasser Hamdi, who was captured in a mode of combat in Afghanistan. And Padilla was, in fact, taken by federal agents as he was getting off a flight from the Chicago International Airport from Pakistan. So this was a very distinct case that had severe repercussions for all American citizens that could be taken from anywhere in the United States based on any abridged evidence that the federal agents might be able to congeal to form a case against them. And so the decision came down that he is entitled to all of the constitutional protections and due process that an American citizen would were they convicted of a federal crime. And so the decision essentially boiled down that the federal government had 30 days with which to release Padilla from federal handling and into a civilian court and a civilian jurisdiction in order to determine his fate. But since they had asked for a stay of the order, a rule of the order, and so now he's kind of, his fate is still up in the air as we speak. And it will be determined whether or not, because in fact it wasn't the full court from the Second Court that heard his appeal, it was a panel. So it was only a three-judge panel that heard the appeal. So they can either bring it before the full court, if the full court decides to hear it, or they can ask the Supreme Court to hear the case. But if both decline to hear that, then they will have to go by the decision of the panel and release him within their custody of 30 days.
And now the decision said that the president can't do this unless Congress authorizes it first.
Right, unless there's an authorization of Congress, which came down from the Japanese internment camp, which is essentially what we're seeing in Guantanamo Bay and a few of the military brigs around the nation, that there are American citizens being held on allegations of terrorist conduct. No actual charges have been filed against them, and no attorney has been allowed to see them. So it's all very...
And this is all taking place by executive order, rather than...
Right.
There's nothing in the law that says that the president can do this.
No. These are wartime powers that he acquired through the Patriot Act and few other executive actions. Okay. That luckily, too, with the Patriot Act, it's been hammered by the legislators on a few counts, some of those egregious provisions. And so hopefully in the next few months that will be amended as well.
I was going to ask you about that. I read something a few weeks ago, well, I guess maybe a month or two ago, actually, about the House of Representatives gutting some of the major provisions in the Patriot Act, and I wondered if you could tell us some of the progress on that, whether the Senate has done the same thing, and wouldn't the President have to sign it?
He would, unless they can get, you know, a veto or rewrite the president's veto. That takes 2/3 of the Senate, which is quite a big number for them at this moment.
Has the Senate passed similar legislation as the House?
They haven't, no. And I have concerns that this is going to turn into a political issue, that this is being put on the back burner to wait until, you know, election time draws a little bit closer.
Another problem is this puts pressure on Congress to go ahead and make it perfectly legal for the president to go ahead and detain people.
Right.
I mean, if he can make a persuasive case, which, I don't know, I guess he'd only have to persuade the congressmen, and they're not all that bright, and he just has to persuade them that, no, really, we really need to hang on to Padilla at the naval brig, well, that just gives them a reason to go ahead and make it all okay after the fact.
Right. It's very concerning, but at least, you know, in these cases, the justices did uphold the, you know, checks of system of balances we have in the Constitution, and have told the executive they don't have, you know, a mandate to go about, you know, destroying the Constitution and doing anything that fits the flavor of the month, really.
So what has been the Justice Department's response to this court's decision?
Well, you know, obviously they're very disappointed. And which is why they asked for the stay of the order. But it is now in the judiciary's hands as to whether or not they will grant a full court appeal, and whether or not the Justice Department, which I think they will, opt to take this or to attempt to take this before the Supreme Court. But even in that case, the Supreme Court currently has two cases on for this year's list to hear on Guantanamo Bay. And so I think their prospects of getting that heard are very slim.
Okay, now the Ninth Circuit Court decision regarding the Guantanamo prisoners is a bit more confusing to me. The Padilla case, to me, is open and shut. He doesn't even have to be a citizen. The Bill of Rights doesn't have the word citizen in it anywhere. It says any person gets these rights guaranteed, and so it really doesn't even matter that he was a citizen, but that he was arrested on American soil. So that's easy enough. But then apparently the Ninth Circuit Court is saying that the Guantanamo prisoners all deserve civilian trials too, and that I have a problem with that. I don't understand how someone who, you know, whether they're guilty Al Qaeda operatives or whether they're innocent Taliban goat herders, if they're being detained at Guantanamo Bay and were captured overseas in Afghanistan somewhere, how did the court decide that they deserve civilian criminal trials?
Well, you have two issues at stake here. I mean, one is that the Constitution does not designate any of these rights to process or, you know, the writ of habeas corpus, in any of the kind of fundamental legal protections we have to citizens only. And all the descriptions, they use the title of person. And so logistically, these rights are granted to all people regardless of their nationality. That's one. Two, for the vast majority of the prisoners at Guantanamo, and we're not sure the exact numbers because the Defense Department has released quite a few in the last few months, but at least over 600 people have been detained for over 2 years. And so any investigation, and that's the contention of the Defense Department, is that this isn't a prison, it's merely a holding facility. But that seems to be a bit bogus as to why you would need to investigate any, you know, potential or alleged Al-Qaeda or Taliban operatives for 2 years in extremely harsh conditions without being able to, you know, see any family or attorneys or have any understanding of why they're there. And so for those reasons, I can understand why. And John McCain, who recently visited, who's a former prisoner of war, who visited Guantanamo, I think, 2 weeks ago, who came back and said, listen, you know, if the Defense Department or, you know, the government has some hard cases against them, this needs to be brought out to light, and they need to charge these men and boys, you know, with these crimes. But if they don't have the evidence, they need to be released. And I think after 2 years' time being held in a prison, I mean, they're definitely accorded that basic privilege, that basic right.
Okay, well, so what is the law say is supposed to happen here? I know that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what the Bush administration is going to do, but
right. According
to the law, are these people supposed to be considered prisoners of war? I mean, they can't be. I mean, the Bill of Rights applies to people arrested within the United States, but
it doesn't apply
to people
arrested in
Afghanistan.
I mean, they're really working off of Madeleine Albright's thrown her hat in the ring on this one as well. That if you read, I mean, the Geneva Convention is incredibly long, and its definition of fighters on both sides is quite strict. And, you know, in the kind of early 20th century, these rules apply. But now, with the greatest threat to not only America's safety, but I would say the safety of the world, that lies in the hands of terrorists who do not wear military brigs, who, you know, are not based in, who are also not necessarily tied with any nation or state or government. You know, these are rogue bands of people who might also wear civilian clothes while they're engaged in combat. And that's one of the kind of administrative details that were the part of the Geneva Convention. You had to wear military brigs in order for them to, you know, distinguish or differentiate between, like, harmless or innocent civilians who might be caught up in this versus military officers. But, you know, again, these are different times, and we're engaged in different types of warfare now with terrorists who do not wear military brigs. But that's one of the provisions that the Bush administration used, is to deny these detainees their prisoner of war status because they were not the kind of, in the traditional sense, enemy combatants.
Well, in the Ninth Circuit.
But I think that's such a minute detail. We need to kind of sweep off any due process or any, you know, human rights away from these men because they, you know, they weren't wearing military clothing, I think is a bit redundant.
I read, let's see, I guess about two-thirds of the decision before I had to go to sleep, but the Ninth Circuit Court decision basically was saying that actually Guantanamo is American sovereign territory, that the Justice Department said, oh no, Guantanamo Bay, that's part of Cuba.
Right.
And that the court said, no, actually, you go and look at the terms of the lease and you define all your legal definitions to their T, you find that Guantanamo actually is sovereign territory, and since they're being held on it, they deserve due process.
Right, right.
So, well, let me ask you then, because, I mean, to me, the idea that a bunch of Al-Qaeda guys who were arrested in Afghanistan are going to get civilian criminal trials here, obviously that's out of the question. So, I mean, let me ask you, what is the proper solution? Do we give them military tribunals, or do we just send them home because now the war's over and we give them back to the Talibs, or?
I think it's important, I mean, to determine the role that any of them might have played, you know, within these terrorist organizations, and then to bring them to trial and to see. I think this is also important from, you know, an investigative stance, that if these people have, if these men have secrets or, you know, certain sensitive information to relay, that this is brought out to light, and it isn't, you know, just in the hands that we're able to determine the extent and also how safe we are. I mean, if there are three times as many people out there who are at risk to our security, then, you know, Congress needs to designate these provisions in order to put out, in order to find these terrorists. But if not, then they do need to be released. But I think, to be honest, either it's a civilian trial or it's a military tribunal, I think the important thing is that they're granted these legal protections and that, you know, a justice of the court is able to hear their appeals. and also though that they have a right to challenge those appeals, which they wouldn't necessarily be granted in a military tribunal. And so that's a great concern that you know, you're not even granted that basic writ of habeas corpus where you can challenge the allegations before you, and you know, if that's the case, to prove your innocence. I've heard from quite a few sources that a few of the men in custody were bought off by bounty hunters, by, you know, kind of rogue groups that wanted to win the favors of the national government. If you look at the kind of, you can't get an exact breakdown of the countries that a lot of these men came from, but some of them came from very corrupt governments and were kind of handed over from these corrupt governments that could have easily, you know, given them away as, you know, those who are on the wrong side of the political spectrum. So it's kind of worrisome, the road that a few of them took to get to Guantanamo. So I think it's important that they at least have that ability to challenge these allegations.
It's interesting, too, isn't it, that John Walker Lind was given a civilian trial and a plea bargain, and this guy Hamdi is, I guess he's not at Guantanamo, but he's in a naval brig somewhere.
Right.
Is there any rhyme or reason to that, or just because they figured they could win one case and they're not so sure about the other? Or?
I think, yeah, I mean, they are taking this in very case-by-case analysis, but it's vague and really arbitrary in terms of, you know, the legal protections they're using or various parts of their rights, whether or not they determine that someone ought to be held for, you know, years or months or granted a civilian trial or not. You know, it's really important that, you know, our legal branch of government has some type of check over this power.
Well, you sound like such a nice lady on the phone, but in your articles, you say some very harsh things about the foundation upon which the Constitution is resting, and that it's getting pretty close to the edge here. You use language like that these prisons resemble Soviet gulags of old, and you talk in your articles quite a few times, I've noticed, you talked about severe danger to all American people and to the rule of law and the Constitution because of what's going on at Guantanamo and in some of these cases. So I wonder if you can expand on that, like why the average doofus driving around right now ought to care one way or another about Padilla or Hamdi or anybody else.
Well, I think if you look back throughout history, the rights that were taken away from, and it always starts with foreign nationals, it always starts with those who don't vote, who, you know, protections and rights are chipped away. The Japanese internment camps actually are a great example. A lot of these started with foreign nationals, and then eventually, as J. Edgar Hoover and a few people in the administration were granted more power and more rights, they extended these policies to American citizens. And we see this now with Yasser Hamdi and Jose Padilla. And the more these civil rights and civil liberties are being chipped away, both from a foreign national perspective, I think we see the blowback domestically as well. And I think it's a great concern for anyone who's been charged with crime, whether it be federal or not. That they be granted these basic constitutional rights. So yes, definitely. I mean, I think it should be a cause that all Americans are behind. And you know, what I've seen from the polls too look very encouraging. You know, and hopefully the people in charge will face severe political consequences if they don't abide by these rules.
Well, Ms. O'Neill, it's like you say, the Constitution is only as strong as the people willing to defend it. And personally, I'd like to thank you for doing your part.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
And allowing this issue to gain more press and more media attention. It's very important that people have access to truth behind these issues.
Great. And everybody, you can look up Ms. O'Neill's writings at independent.org. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Philip.